views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a top radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Well, welcome to Voices of Women. We're having a great fall day here in Seattle. Beautiful sunshine. Starting to get cold night, so it's that change of weather, but the fall is such a beautiful time. So I hope you're all enjoying that. Today I'm talking with the best-selling author, Barbara Hand-Cloud. She's known for her books, The Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, Awakening the Planetary Mind, and The Mayan Code. But today we're going to talk about her debut as a novelist. She has a new book out called Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. And she has woven together a story of romance, deep earth forces, psychic powers, the Vatican world control centered on an ancient ruby that inspires mystical visions. And Barbara is known for having taught at sacred sites throughout the world and also maintains an astrological website, which is www.handclow2012.com. So welcome, Barbara.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. So let's start off with, you know, I like people to start with their story. And first, you have been so involved on sort of the dimensional world, you know, out there in the Pleiadian, the nine dimensions, and now switching to go to writing fiction stories. What first brought you into, you know, the field that you're known for, you know, around the world? What drew you to be, you know, an acclaimed teacher in this area?
Yeah, I would take quite a bit of a big chance by switching genres. But what I felt was that multidimensional consciousness could be even more exquisite and intense in fiction. Because what happens is each one of the characters has a particular personality and certain psychic skills and certain intuitive skills. And so I felt that I could go a lot further with all the work that I developed for 40 years in nonfiction. And so far, as far as I can tell from the early responses, I've only had one book signing so far. People are starting to tell me that reading the book is like getting a Reiki session. That the energy is right there in the characters, and then there's a synergy going on between the characters themselves, which I certainly feel when I'm working on it. And by the way, this is the first book in a trilogy. So right now I'm writing the second book, and the same kind of energy is coming right into the second book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
I'm
when
really
I finish reading the book.
I'm really kind of doing what I always did before, but I'm just using another art form, and I actually think it's more entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it has that intrigue and that mystery, and people love mysteries.
And also storytelling, because people love storytelling.
Yes. And I'm not surprised this is the first one out of three, because I think at the end of the book I was kind of going, okay, what's next? So it's a great, I highly recommend it. It's a great read. How did this come to you, the story?
Yeah, that's a great question. My last book was Awakening the Planetary Mind, and then I kind of took a little rest while I adjusted to 2012, like I think a lot of us did. And meanwhile, all of a sudden, in May 2011, All of the characters in this book appeared in my office, and I couldn't see them or touch them, but they definitely appeared as beings. And I took out a white yellow sheet and a pen, and they gave me their names and ages and family background and educational background and their jobs that they were involved in. And I wrote it all down, and I was really kind of mystified by that. And so I told my husband Jerry about it. And Jerry and I teach together. And for the first time in my whole career, and I've written nonfiction for 40 years, Jerry said, "You got it. You got to write that book." In the past, it was more like, "Oh no, another book, you know, coming." Because they do. It's like birthing, for me at least. When a book is ready to come, it really is like being pregnant. But this time, I got all this encouragement, which I really needed because this is a completely new genre for me. Now, back in my 20s, I wanted to write fiction. And when I surveyed the kind of fiction that was selling, kind of violent crime novels, mostly by male writers, and I also love good literature. I love good literature from all countries in the world. And so I wanted to write good fiction, but I felt like I couldn't publish it. And so what I've done here is I made enough of a name for myself as a nonfiction writer to get a novel published. And hopefully people are going to love it and it's going to take off. And I hope so because it's a trilogy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, I love it because I think I read that these characters came to you, and I'm glad you shared that in the sense of because I was trying to picture that. Well, how did they come to you and give you this information? And and I would imagine that were they also part of writing it? You know, the story. I mean, not you wrote it, but the storyline of it. Did they come to you with?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. I didn't plot it. What happened was first the characters came, and then I decided, okay, I'm going to give it a shot here. So I set myself up in my office. And by the way, I work in a tiny little space. My office is 4 by 6 feet. I always work in this tiny little space so that I can concentrate energy. And so I just let it fly, and I never plotted it. And it came out exactly as it was almost... I don't want to say it was like channeling, because it wasn't that feeling, because I've had the experience of channeling. It was more like I felt that I was writing a book that had already been written down. And all I had to do was just be in a really, Chris, was get myself out of the way. And I spent a lot of my time in here getting myself out of the way. Whenever my logical brain would come in or anything like that, I would just, like, wipe it out and just let it flow. And then, of course, once it all came in, then it was... a huge amount of time editing it. Fiction is actually much harder to write than nonfiction.
Yeah. Well, I would love to know this sense of how do you stop that voice, you know, to let it flow. I think for writers out there is like, you know, because those voices of what's next or am I crazy writing this or where, you know, all those voices in our head, what do you have a technique for that, to get into that place of letting it flow?
Yeah, one of the things I discovered quite early on, and I think anybody who's going to be capable of writing fiction, and that was a test for me. I'm actually happy to say now that I can write fiction, but I didn't know, you know. And what I learned pretty quickly is you've got to get right inside a character. Like, when they're speaking or when they're going through some kind of experience, you've got to be able to see them, you've got to be able to feel them, you've got to be able to see the room around them from their perspective. And it's just something... it's the ability to, like, shift your consciousness, like, into a certain point in space and time and then function from there. And for some reason, I have the ability to do that. I actually wouldn't have known if I hadn't tried. And it's lots of fun. It in a way, it's like writing a play, or it's like creating theater.
Yes, and I know I've been given a message, well, many years ago, of a book, and I think I wrote one page, but I've not gotten to that place of, you know, really getting down to it and hearing all those voices, because it's like stories of many, many people that could come through me. But it's you know, and I think there's a lot of trust there. We're talking about is really trusting those voices, trusting that you can see everything. So it's a, you know, fascinating process.
Yeah, and trusting you can stay sane, too. Because to be more specific, one of the things that I think is certainly going on with this type of art is that the writer is tuning into the collective unconscious. And the writer is also being guided by a muse, as far as I can tell. The muse guiding this book is almost completely palpable to me. But as my muse was guiding me along, my muse is taking me into different threads within the collective unconscious. And it can be a pretty crazy world, that world of all those voices inside, because those voices are within us as individuals, and then those voices are out there functioning in the culture as a whole and in the collective. And, of course, in this book, I'm going very, very deeply into that field, because the goal of this book was to discuss and illustrate and show how does evil get into the world. And so the reason the basic subject matter of the book is priestly sexual abuse of children in the church. The reason I use that as a background topic is because, to me, it's one of the best examples of something going on in this planet that's totally evil. And people participating in it as well as people observing it, everybody agrees this is absolutely evil. Where does it come from? Why does it continue? How can we stop it? And so the book is going deeply into where those ideas and where those behavioral patterns are coming from, as specifically within the Vatican and within the Catholic Church. And by the way, I didn't write this to badmouth the Vatican or to badmouth the Catholic Church, because within the Church, and I once was a Catholic, within the Church itself, people are very disturbed by where this is coming from. Anybody of good intention is attempting to understand this better. And so the main thing that I was able to accomplish, it's still a mystery where this is coming from, and it's going to take the whole trilogy to explore that. But the one thing I do feel I got a handle on in the first book is the issue of how individuals can handle this kind of energy, and how individuals can work with their own consciousness in order to handle personal experiences like this or experiences like this in the culture.
You know, I'd love for you to go into that more. I think that would be very helpful. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back and talk more with Barbara Hanclough.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
My dream is to end homelessness.
My passion is living a green life.
My dream is to end poverty.
My passion is volunteering.
My passion is making a difference.
My dream is to cure Lyme disease.
My passion is rebuilding communities.
My passion is helping those in need.
My passion is caring for the elderly.
My dream is to find a cure for cancer.
My dream is to leave a better world for my children.
We all have that special passion, that lifelong dream that drives us to live our lives with meaning and to create a better world. No matter what drives you, we can all make an impact. Dr. Pat Basile is helping others make their dreams come true, so we can all help make our world a better world.
To learn more about how Dr. Pat is building a community of sharing hope, strength, funds, knowledge, and information, visit abetterworldcrowdfunding.com today. That's abetterworldcrowdfunding.com.
Do you want to transform your life's trauma and challenges into the gift that your life was meant to be? It's time for you to take control of your soul journey to heal, grow, and shine. Manifest your destiny with Wendy Wolf, soul transformer, energy, and psychic healer. To start your soul journey, contact Wendy at healgrowshine.com or email Wendy at wendy@wendyrwolf.com and start your adventure today.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health,
Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com. You know that I have from the start. So fill me up, fill me up, burn it up, don't break my heart.
I'll be over at 10, you told me time and again. Well, welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and I'm talking with Barbara Hanclough today. She's the author of her new novel, Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. So you were just talking about one of your main themes in the book, Barbara, is about the sexual abuse of children. And in the book, it's surrounding around the Catholic Church. And, of course, we've heard a lot about that in the news, and it's been a big problem in the Catholic Church. And you just were saying how part of the book is for individuals to manage it, to handle it. And so let's talk a little bit about that, because that is, you know, we all know somebody, even if we don't know it, we know people that are going through the trauma of sexual abuse. And so I would imagine, you know, since you're having your characters going through that process of learning how to deal with it emotionally and all that, so I would love for you to share that aspect of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, some of the characters are actually experiencing abuse in the novel or in the past in relationship to the novel. And so the issue of individual healing and how that works out is mainly carried out through the characters' experiences. In one case, the redemption of a person who was abused as a small child and then turned around and became an abuser himself. So that level is dealt with just with the stories in the novel and characterization. But then the other gift that I think is coming through this book is more of my own work on the issue of the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension is the dimension of the collective mind, or you can call it the collective unconscious. And it's the place where all our thoughts and feelings interact with each other. And it's the part of the field that we live in that, for instance, possession comes from, and the gripping of people by evil energy. And so what I'm really attempting to do is to, you know, basically offer the readers a much more sophisticated perspective on how this works and how it functions. Because I've noticed myself personally, since I've kind of achieved that level, I've noticed that I can detect what's going on energetically in a much more sophisticated way. Like if I'm just in the third dimension, which is linear space and time, if that's my only consciousness, then I'm not necessarily going to read these kind of bizarre energies that are coming from these fields from another dimension. And so I would say that my gift in this book is to have characters perceiving on many, many different dimensions and observing how that functions for them and how it works for them.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's something that actually we all do, but many of us aren't aware of it. We don't know how to tap into that fourth dimension, that the energetics of what's going on, and yet there's many teachers out there to teach us and to learn, because there's a lot of information in that collective consciousness and in the energetics and the fourth dimension. There's a lot of information there for us.
Yeah. And another way I tackled it too, you just reminded me of this, is some of the characters can actually see that kind of energy when it's moving through people. They can see reptilian aspects in people's eyes, or sometimes their skin kind of is like snake skin. And I decided to introduce that in this book because I have, my whole life, it's been that way for me. I can actually see these energies in people. And I just decided that it's time to start to describe this, even though somebody might think that I'm kind of a loony. But I'm pretty safe doing it because there's been so much of a big discussion going on the last 20 or 30 years about reptilian energy and reptilian forces. And so I actually am showing how these things work visually as well as by feeling.
Oh, yes, I remember that in reading in the book. And it was interesting because it would be so fleeting, you know, the character... She'd see something, but then she'd doubt it, and like, what was that? And then it'd be gone. And
yeah, it's very fast. That's another issue altogether. It's like just the flash of a photograph, you know, a photograph or something. It's just so brief. But But when people learn to spot it, they become much more sophisticated about what's going on around them.
Yeah, and it's a good way, you know, of judging character of, you know, who you want around in your life. And if you see those kinds of flashes of images or energetics, to pay attention, because something's telling you something like, this is not a safe person to be around.
Yeah, and also this book is really exploring sex, too. Not just abusive sex, but also good sex. And it's just interesting how a person will not see what's going on with their partner because they've fallen in love or there's something they want to get out of a relationship. And I'm attempting to show that you can see better, you can be more clear, even if you've fallen madly in love and you want something. And that's mainly worked through by means of one character, Sarah Adamson, the main female character in the novel. And I had a lot of fun working with her. And, you know, every one of the characters, of course, is a facet of me. I'm absolutely certain that's what goes on with fiction. And in my case, I really wanted to get a PhD in early church studies after I got my master's in theology. But I had four kids at home, and I had a job. And I couldn't go get a PhD. So my character, Sarah, she gets the PhD. So there are a few aspects of me in the book that I... You know, things that I always wanted to do but I couldn't do, I just put them in the book, which is fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. That's interesting. An interesting way to explore that and even, you know, personify it for yourself. That's fun.
Yeah.
Well,
it gave me the chance to kind of feel out what would that have been like if I actually had done that. And it was a lot of fun, and it doesn't interfere with the objectivity of the character or anything like that. It just makes it fun for the writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's the other theme is just you know there's a lot because it takes place in Rome. Very, you know, it's so connected the whole story to the Vatican, and you bring historical aspects to it too with so. There's an aspect of you talk a lot about the previous Pope, Benedict XVI, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. So
yeah.
What aspect of that was important for in the book for you?
Well, yeah, Chris, for me, that's when what happened is I the book was one half finished when the Pope resigned, and this is Cardinal Ratzinger, who then became Benedict XVI. And so the day that Benedict XVI resigned was the day that I knew I had a book. Because what happened then was that whole issue of the church collapse and everything, it was something that I was able to explore in the book. And then, of course, now we have a new pope. And of course, the new pope is going to be in the sequel. And one of the interesting things about the timeline that I seem to be working with is just as this book comes out, the pope comes to the United States. Really amazing.
Yeah.
So I've been doing interviews this last week, you know, just while the Pope has come. And, of course, I don't really know what kind of character the Pope is going to be in the sequel. I'm still observing him to attempt to understand who he is and what he's doing. But regardless, even if he's the most perfect person in the world, he's still running the Roman Catholic Church. And that takes us to a deeper level, which is this book is also working with the change of the ages, the end of the age of Pisces, and the movement that we're experiencing going into the age of Aquarius. And organized religions on the planet are what developed during the age of Pisces during the last 2,000 years. And at this point, we're going into a transformation and into a transition into something else. And so that's the reason that I decided to work with Rome and with the Vatican and with the Pope, because I really wanted to get a hold of the last 2,000 years of the age of Pisces.
Yes, and with that, there's that question, will the church survive in this shift, in this transformation? What role does the church play, and even can it shift and serve? I mean, it's there to serve the people, and yet it has seemed to be so out of touch. Pope Francis has been changing some of that, but he's also... it's just like, you know, when you're president of the United States, how much work can you do when you've got all these other people around you who kind of control things also, you know, it's a political structure too at the Vatican.
Yeah, and then there's the Pope's astrologers, because, as you know, I'm an astrologer and have been for many years. And the period of time from the fall equinox this year through this eclipse night before last, and even in for the next week or so, is one of the most incredible astrological phases I've ever seen. It's a period of time where, first of all, the collective consciousness of people can be culled. In other words, the Pope came just at the point when he had the maximum opportunity to influence the minds of people as much as possible. And so this can't be accidental. I mean, and I'm exploring that in the novel, and it'll be clear. One character in the novel knows astrology. And anybody who knows any astrology at all would immediately say that the Pope astrologers picked the perfect moment in time. So this would suggest to me that there's much more going on with Francis than meets the eye. And, of course, that's wonderful material for a novelist to explore.
Oh, yeah, and how much fact do you? Because it seems you do bring a lot of fact into this book. How much fact, and then exploration into fiction, you know?
Yeah, and there is factual material in the book, as you know. Background on priestly sexual abuse cases. There's background on some of the early Vatican and Roman issues, and all of the material in the book that's factual is absolutely accurate. Now, it's just presented through characters. One of the characters is a New York Times reporter who's researching a lot of this material, and another one is an early church theologian. And so they are researching, and it's not presented as it doesn't say so-and-so said this, if you know what I mean. But all of the material in the book is absolutely factual.
Yeah, it felt factual. You know, it wasn't like it didn't feel like it was expanded on or, you know, exaggerated. Well, this is Chris Danish. You're listening to Voices of Women, and we're going to take a short break and come back and talk more with Barbara Hanclow.
A morning filled with dynamic, inspirational music, spirituality, and uplifting messages by TJ Woodward. Come and connect with community conversations and awaken your senses. Awakened Living Sundays with TJ Woodward. Join TJ every Sunday in the San Francisco Bay Area Chapel at Fort Mason and live streaming online 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Time. To learn more and access the live stream, visit www.awakenedlivingsf.org.
Transformation Talk Radio is dedicated to the education and awareness of Lyme disease.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Lyme Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Pat, joined here by
Dr. Nusheen Darvish.
Dr. Pat Basile and Dr. Nusheen Darvish will be bringing the most innovative, groundbreaking information, research, treatment innovations, and stories from those it affects every day.
I'm so excited to be talking about this.
We have so much to share.
Dr. Darvish and I are planning to do is connect the dots.
People suffering with all sorts of chronic diseases, it's time. It is time for them to transform.
Tune into Lyme Talk Radio and help keep our mission strong.
For the loyal listeners out there that have been listening to this incredible show on Lyme disease, we are not going to let you down. We're going to come through stronger and enrich the platform for Lyme disease awareness through Lyme Talk Radio. The message will continue, the conversations will become stronger, and the healing epic.
Calling all dreamers. Are you living your dream life? Actualize your possibilities with Life Coaching Radio and your host, Deb Stetzer. If you're feeling stuck in a rut, Deb is here to help you turn your dreams into a reality. Life Coaching Radio. Dream it, live it, be it. To learn more about Deb, visit www.mylifecoach.us.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and I'm here with Barbara Han Clow, and she is sharing with us her new book, Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. So, Barbara, please share your website information, things that you have going on with you, and if you're going to be doing any appearances.
Okay. My website is handclow2012.com. And that's where you get information on workshops and books and all that kind of stuff, plus periodic astrological postings. And then I'm going to appear at East West Books in Seattle. That's on 12th Avenue at 5 to 7 p.m. on November 20th, on a Friday night, in case anybody's listening and wants to come over. And we're going to schmooze and have a talk and do a book signing and all kinds of fun things like that.
Yeah, it's great. So November 20th, East West Bookshop is a great place to go see people like Barbara Han Clow. So I encourage people to mark that on the calendar. So one of the aspects that I found fascinating in the book, there was one, not that it was a character, but it was the woman who was working on her PhD and studying, she was studying the first Christian heretic, Marciana Pontus. And so that's one of your, you know, factual things in the book. So what is it about him? And it's something that was brand new for me. It was fascinating that, you know, here he was condemned for being a heretic, and yet he had a really strong following or built a strong church, and things went sideways. But so let's talk about that.
Yeah. Well, Marcion of Pontus was known as the first heretic by the early church fathers. And he was on the planet from around 70-80 A.D. up until about 150 A.D. And back around that period of time and into the through the second century, his church was much, much bigger than the church in Rome. It was a church that was mainly in the eastern part of the Catholic world. And he was such a heretic that nobody has ever heard of him, and yet he had a huge influence at one period in time. And so I decided to have my character explore him, because I think he brings up some interesting issues about Judeo-Christian conflicts. And one of the things that Marcion believed is that when Jesus or when Christ came to the planet, that this should be a new religion, and that it should not attach itself to the Old Testament and the early scriptures. And the reason I went after this issue, Chris, is because I'm after this issue of the age is changing again. If you go back 2,000 years ago, we're coming to the end of the Age of Aries and the beginning of the Age of Pisces. And what I wanted to do was explore just exactly what was going on right at that beginning point. And that's going to be a theme all the way through the trilogy, because now we're moving, after 2,000 years of exploration of Judeo-Christianity, we're moving into an entirely new field. So that's why Marciana Pontus is in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it brings an interesting concept, because it was sort of based on, well, the Old Testament's kind of based on fear and a condemning God, and the New Testament is love, and just, you know, and that's that duality that we
That's very astute on your part, because what Marcion said was Marcion didn't want to throw out the old God, and he didn't want to throw out the old scriptures. He just felt that they should stay with the culture that created him, which is, of course, the Hebrew culture. And so he felt that that Yahweh was a God of law and a God of justness. And he felt that Jesus came along with a change, that Jesus was coming in more as a God of love. And in the sequel, I'm starting to explore the issue of what really was going on with love in the early Christian church, including the issue of sacred sexuality. What happened is the patriarchy took over, and the religion of the goddess, or the religion of the fusion of man and woman, was basically dumped by the wayside. And yet now we're in the middle of a sexual awakening on the planet, and all these aspects of love that are available to humans are becoming very important to people again. So it's such a rich tableau. It's so much fun to dip into it. Especially the reason that I like my novel, of course I do, I might not, but I do. The reason I like it is the characters are so intelligent. They're well-educated, very, very intelligent, verbal people. And then also there's two generations in the novel. So we have young characters exploring reality, and then we have their parents. And it was really fun to also bring in the perspective of two generations on these issues.
Well, and I think that's reflective of what's going on now. I'm finding a real connection with millennials and, you know, like the baby boomers, and sometimes it skips a generation, but that connection and that, I think it's important that we're working in, and I'm hearing it more and more, of intergenerational, of working towards these things that we want to change on the planet. We need everybody involved, and we need the elders for their wisdom and their experience, and we need the young for their fresh new ideas, their excitement, their willing to, just like when we did back when we were that age, willing to stretch themselves and not be held back by, not hold themselves back of what's possible.
Yeah, and I agree. And also, if we go back to 19th century fiction, which I think was the high point of novel writing, maybe it'll come back again. And in those novels, we have many generations, and we have young people learning from old people, older people, and we have older people instructing and training younger people. And for the last 50, 60 years, I think mostly because of the wars, World War I and World War II, we've had 100 years. We've had a breakdown in the multi-generational communication. And I think we're all losing out because of that. And so I really wanted to, like, bring that back through the novel, which is the way it used to be done. This isn't a very old-fashioned way of doing that, but I think it's very important.
Yes, and another aspect, and you touched on a little bit, is this you kind of suggest the Vatican capping Earth energy and going back thousands of years, and this whole sense of even kind of like there's a sense of using evil for its purpose to control people.
Yeah, definitely. And then the reason the novel is set in the Vatican and set in Tuscany is there's a power line running all the way through the planet that actually goes through Africa and then through Italy and then up through Germany and up through Sweden that was discovered and written about by Dr. Carl Johan Kalman, the author of the Mayan calendar. Just looking at my book. And so I wanted to explore it. It's called the Midline. And I wanted to explore that because as far as I can see and as far as Carl can see, what's happening is the actual planetary flow of energy is very deeply connected with that midline and very deeply centered in it. And so as far as the Vatican is concerned, I went way back into the Paleolithic times in relationship to the location of the Vatican. And all of this material, by the way, again, is factual. It's actually scientific. It's utterly fascinating. And assuming that the global elite is using information like this to control people, then what goes on is all this stuff is very hidden. And so by writing fiction, it gives me the chance to bring that out.
So you say all this is factual. You're talking about the midline, but is it also factual of these caves and things underneath the Vatican that you've talked about in the book?
I missed you.
Oh, well, there's something about caves or these underground passages and caves.
Oh,
under
I see
the Vatican.
What you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is not something that I would consider to be factual, but somebody told me that. A priest actually told me that. So the other thing that fiction, now the factual material in the book is just simply if scientific issues are discussed, if interviews are discussed, if topics are discussed like that, those are factual. But when we get into some of the psychic issues, such as passages under the Vatican and some of the things that people are seeing under the Vatican, and by the way, this is very common for people to have that experience. That material, first of all, is coming from the psychic realm. And then in my case, I've actually been told a lot of things about what goes on over there, but I will never be able to divulge that information. So that's the beauty of fiction. I can go ahead and bring some of that information out, and chances are people are going to resonate with it. That's an interesting thing about you read something and you go, I don't know whether you can prove this or not, but this feels right to me. And the reason that that's such an important issue in the novel is that the way the church connects itself up is by means of the sacrament, like communion, confession, holy orders, ordination. And the other thing I'm exploring in the book is how this deep, intense earth energy that pools and collects at the Vatican becomes global by means of the sacrament. And I think these are really, really interesting issues, particularly for Catholics. I think there's a lot to think about here regarding what goes on when we do the sacrament.
Mm-hmm. And it makes me wonder, too, if there's any backlash. Have you felt any or heard any backlash about your book because of all the stuff on the Catholic Church?
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
How confident do you feel about your retirement? Ask Ameriprise financial advisor Jeff Packman about the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach. Together, you and Jeff can break down retirement planning step by step to get to the real answers you need. Call Jeff Packman financial advisor today at 425-453-0272. Office is located at 601 108th Avenue Northeast, Suite 1800 in Bellevue, Washington, 98004. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, member of FINRA and SIPC.
Let the transition begin. Tune in to the hit show, Majestic Insights Radio, Success for Life's Transitions, with host Carrie Keith. Carrie is a gifted intuitive coach, healer, and teacher who will lead you through her empowering techniques of ancient wisdom and awareness so you can live your happiest, healthiest, and most vibrant life. Let Carrie teach you the tools of transformation that will help you experience success for all of life's transitions. To learn more about Carrie, visit www.majesticinsights.com.
It's a lonelier place. I kiss the morning goodbye, but down inside, you know we never know why.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and I've been talking with Barbara Hanclow about her book, Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. So, Barbara, we were just talking about the Catholic Church and the midlines going through underneath the Vatican and
Just, you know, a lot of fascinating topics, and I was wondering, I'm kind of going through a coughing fit, sorry about that, but if you've, you know, what the response from Catholic people have been about the book, and if any people who are upset because you're, you know, feel that you're attacking it, or they're in, they are in favor of what you're writing about. But
yeah, I haven't gotten any negative feedback, but I certainly expect it. Because I'm going after these issues in a very controversial way, in a very clear way. But my intention is to educate. Like as I delved deeply into it and had the opportunity to do that and started to explore just the geophysical aspects of Italy and the kind of power that exists in Italy, including volcanic power. I mean, at one point, the characters go down near Naples, which is near where Pompeii is located. And it's just a fantastic, you know, people who have been to Rome, there's a feeling in Rome that just is not like any other place on the earth. And I even found references to these kinds of deep feelings in the 19th century different novels. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to educate. And as far as I'm concerned, people can read it and consider it, and they can make their own conclusions about it. But the Catholics that I have talked to so far are telling me that this is a fantastic book for processing a lot of the issues that they've had with the church. It could conceivably help people reconcile themselves with the church, possibly. I don't know. I mean, I'm only writing about what I see and deeply, and then we'll kind of see what people think.
Yeah, then you're bringing up important issues that are out there, you know, in the general population of sexual abuse, and we all know the stories of the problems that we've had with the Catholic priests and sexual abuse, and it's probably one of our most harmful things, the evil things that goes on in the planet, and it's still, you know, the sex trade and girls being sold and all this. And I think one of the things that's happening right now is the exposure. I mean, I think one of the ways to heal this and to change it is exposure.
Yeah, first of all is exposure, and then secondly comes understanding. And the deepest question in the book in this regard would have to do with the issue of the hierarchy itself, the male celibate hierarchy, which is what I think is going to go, by the way, with the age of Aquarius. I don't think the church is going to go away, but I think the male celibate hierarchy is going to go away. And one of the things the novel does is, of course, all of the information on priestly sexual abuse is factual. And I think readers would be shocked by how extensive it was and is, and the fact that it has been going on over about 1,700 years. As soon as the church consolidated itself under Constantine, we start having reports of constant sexual abuse going on in the church. So I think that the topic is thinking about how the hierarchy, the male celibate hierarchy, ends up creating something like this. I think it's a very, very important issue. I think it's something that's got to be faced. And Francis, of course, isn't facing any of that. If you watch him closely, he's not going after any of the deeper issues, such as female clergy, married priests, issues like that. He's just not touching it. Because if he touches it, it collapses the whole hierarchy of which he's at the top point.
Yes, I heard that from somebody, too, on the radio. They were, there was one criticism about the Pope, is that he wasn't really addressing the sexual abuse issue.
Yeah.
And it is
the bishops in Philadelphia, and that was where one of the worst scandals occurred with Cardinal Bevilacqua. And that's in the first novel, by the way, even before Francis did this. So he did go into it, but he did it, as usual, in the little old boys' club. And it's not going to work anymore. The church is going to continue to shrink as long as the hierarchy is in control.
Yeah, actually, for me, that points to a whole new, it's not even just the church, it's our whole hierarchy system that we have in the world, and politics, and financial, and all the institutions, the hierarchy that is in place, we're seeing it's not working anymore, and we're in the stage of, well, what do we create instead?
Yeah, and also a hierarchy has to be on a firm basis. because you can make a case for hierarchy working in some situations, but regarding the Catholic Church, the whole hierarchy is based on the premise that Jesus was a celibate male, and he wasn't. He, being a Jewish man, he would have been married, and I could go on and on. All of our listeners have heard all about that. And so in the sequel, I'm going after what was really going on with Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And that is fascinating material, because at this point, the scholars have dug up enough information so that we've got a lot to go on now. And the other way to collapse a hierarchy is to expose the basis of the hierarchy if it's a false basis. And this is a false basis.
Yes, yeah, that's a good point. It's finding that pea under the mattress, or if that's the analogy. But yeah, you have to have things based on truth. And if things are covered up for the purpose of power over, which it, to me, that's what it feels like, at some point it's going to collapse.
That's right. And that's the
unfortunately, it's been 2,000 years. Well, what else would you like to share with us? They have a fascinating thing, and because the title, Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. So maybe share a little bit about this ruby crystal and the role it plays.
Yeah, and I'm wearing it. I was given this stone about 30 years ago by a friend who was on the verge of dying. And I've been working with the stone ever since then. And this is the first information that's coming out of that stone. And so in the deep core level in this novel, there's some really wonderful psychic material coming through. And I'm just letting it come as it wants to.
So do you meditate on your ruby crystal and get information?
Do I what?
Do you meditate on your ruby crystal? You say you're wearing it. You meditate on it.
I had a ring. What I did is I had it set in a ring. It was the stone was given to me, and then I had it set in a ring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a great big. It's not worth a lot of money or anything like that, but it's very old and very ancient and very special.
Yeah. So I was just curious if you meditate on it, and if you feel like it gives you information.
I wear it whenever I'm talking about the book or whenever I'm writing. I never write without not wearing it, because that's where the muse is, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I use crystals a lot. There's a lot of descriptions in the book of working with crystals, because I use them a lot.
Yeah. And that's part of the story. The woman gets this ring, and she gets information from it. It starts talking to her, you know. And I always think there is energy in things. There's objects are not solid. They're fluid, and there's energy in them. And so, actually, if we tune into them, there's information for us to tap into.
Yeah. And Chris, was this a page turner for you?
I read it straight through. I didn't thought. You know, it was one of those things that you pick up the book, and I don't know how many. I do nighttime reading, but it didn't take me very long to read it. So.
So did you find that it read easily for you and read fast?
Yeah, it did.
The reason I'm asking that question is if you look at the material that we're talking about today, you wouldn't think that it was a page-turner. And yet it is a page-turner, because the characters are so much fun.
Yeah, and that is it. It's the characters. Well, we're going to have to close our talk now. I'm so glad to have had you on the show today, Barbara. Thank you so much.
I missed that.
Oh,
I thought you were signing off.
I was just thanking you for being on the show.
Oh, thank
today.
You. That's what I thought you said. So we're signing off, and it's been great talking with you.
So I want to remind people that Barbara is going to be at the Seattle East West Bookshop on November 20th from 5 to 7. So come meet Barbara and go to her website, www.handcloud2012.com. And I want to let people know Woman of Wisdom is having a fall festival October 24th. And we'd love to see you there at the North Seattle College. And there is room for booths if you're a vendor, you're an artist, you're a healer, a psychic healer, a reader, tarot reader, all that. Applications are available. Just go to our new website, www.thewowconference.org. And also we have a call for vendors for our marketplace at our conference in February, and that is also there. So just go to thewowconference.org.
You You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.